right? And what is the psychology of a human male gets tricky, as we've discussed before. Discussing human nature involves a mix of like pseudo-historic analysis and anthropological analysis combined with current psychological research on individuals. And where this is really important, and this is where I want to talk a lot about the psychology of this movie, is in the stuff I mentioned last time, the social dominance orientation, which comes from social dominance theory. Social dominance theory being one of the many theories that arose to explain what the fuck happened in the early 1900s to mid 1900s. And so, you know, it comes up alongside things like authoritarianism and discussions of right-wing authoritarianism, discussion authoritarian personality disorders, discussions of system justifying, legitimizing myths and things like that. Social dominance orientation is specifically the study of what is going on in our psychology that leads to the fact that all the societies we see today, it seems like, broadly speaking, are sort of unjust intergroup hierarchies of dominance. Why is it that everywhere you go, there are oppressed classes and marginalized people and, you know, certain races or sexes or whatever hold power? Why is there patriarchy everywhere? Yeah. Okay. And in answer to that question, they use a combination of sort of Marxist analysis of ideology and some analysis of psychology to essentially say humans buy into a bunch of legitimizing myths like meritocracy and patriarchy that make these hierarchies seem justified to us, seem ethical when they're not. And what they find is that there's a correlation between belief in those legitimizing myths and certain psychological dispositions, what they call social dominance orientation. The higher your social dominance orientation, the higher the likelihood that you're going to believe in patriarchy or racism or other kinds of discrimination that set up a permission structure for inequality.
Yeah.
All right, with me so far?
Yep, I'm there with you. I was about to ask why, but I think it's...
Why what?
Why those things work out that way. But I think it's because those legitimizing myths are telling you that you're supposed to be the person in charge and that you're better. And so it's pretty easy to explain what the attractiveness of those.
Yeah, and this is where we get into some really interesting data that I find fascinating that I've been going over for my dissertation. So social dominance orientation predicts you will find higher rates of social dominance orientation, or social dominance theory, you'll find higher rates of social dominance orientation and by extension, higher rates of legitimizing myths amongst the dominant class because those myths have certain benefits for them, both legitimizing their higher status, but also boosting their egos and self-esteem and stuff because those myths tell them they deserve their higher status, right? Meritocracy being one of the best versions of this kind of legitimizing myth in terms of its effectiveness.
Yeah.
To the point where it has weeded out the other legitimizing myths a lot. So meritocracy crowds out patriarchy and racism to some extent and makes them sort of less publicly appropriate, but at the same time makes it more publicly appropriate to essentially throw people under the bus for being poor or whatever because they didn't work hard enough. And you just assume they didn't work hard enough. So where this gets fascinating is a reoccurring piece of data in the social dominance world is that all other things being equal, men have higher rates of social dominance orientation than non-men.
Interesting. And this is... Yeah. And this is... Not just in the like colonized world, right?
Well, so.
Because this is the question that I always have, right? Because like
the
cultural thing that I always come back to is like, is this human nature or is this our culture? Because there is a particular culture
question, right? Callie.
Because obviously, like defining a particular culture in a certain way, like. A lot of the things that we think of as human nature are actually the nature of our specific cultural upbringing. And so I'm always interested in whether or not these things arise outside of that cultural upbringing. So if you see them outside of that cultural upbringing, i.e. in indigenous societies before colonization or indigenous societies that remain siloed off from the colonized world, like do those... if those things exist there, then we can say that's maybe a more, at least a more base human tendency as opposed to cultural teachings. So yeah, that's exactly. Always going to be my question about those things is like, in those societies, does it come up there as well?
And it is 100% the question you absolutely should be asking. It's one we've talked about before because it's so hard to answer, right? So psychology is the study of human, study of minds, right? And one question is, are there universal features to human minds?
Yeah.
For example, I would argue that there is a universal feature of human minds that we are hardwired for fairness judgments. Not always good fairness judgments, but we have a sense of fairness in a consistent sense. It arises very early in children. One way to initially respond to this is just be like, look, the nature versus nurture distinction is outdated, right? Yeah. Everything is a mix of nature and nurture, but there are also things that can sometimes seem universal. So the question is, how do we tell if something is a universal constant for human nature?
Right.
And you mentioned one of the ways in which we can try to provide evidence for that kind of claim, which is going to be looking at cultures that don't appear to have been touched by our culture and see if their behaviors are fundamentally the same as our culture.
Right.
And you can do this not just with indigenous cultures, but with non-Western cultures, for example. So if your concern is that there's something weird about Westerners that leads to a lot of dominance orientation, you might look at non-Western cultures and see if these things are similar. And they are. So you find that there is universality on that level. Then there are other ways you could do it. We've talked before about the anthropological arguments where people will often say, so in response to the claim that social dominance, theorists will say, they basically say social dominance is a universal. In every society, you find hierarchical social dominance. And then you'll have folks like Graeber who will come back and say, well, if you look at prehistoric societies, they were much more egalitarian. They didn't, they had things that deliberately resisted dominance hierarchies. And social dominance orientation acknowledges the existence of what they call hierarchy attenuating legitimizing myths. And the word myth here doesn't necessarily mean false. It just means an ideology in a big sense.
Right.
So egalitarianism, democracy, liberalism, those are legitimizing ideologies or myths that can theoretically break down dominance hierarchies. So they reduce the separations between the groups, the sort of injustice. And what the social dominance folks argue is stable societies are the result of a mix of legitimizing myths, both hierarchy enhancing and hierarchy attenuating, that are shared throughout the population and that hold things in sufficient tension that everybody is basically going to accept the status quo. And one thing you do see associated with social dominance orientation is defensiveness of the status quo,
right,
which is how it gets tied to system justification theory. Because if your system is dominance oriented, system justification theory says we are all inclined to justify the system that we live in because it is scary to think that the system we live in is bad.
Right.
And so for pure safety and comfort reasons, we believe that the system is just and therefore justify the hierarchies.
And that explains why people who benefit less or don't benefit from that system at all will still defend it, because of the comfort of the known and the to one degree or another, if you're alive to talk about it, the system at least so far has been survivable. And so you resist the change because the change you fear will make things even worse, to where things may not be survivable anymore.
Yup. And it gets so much worse because there are people who think that's something you should do. So here's how this argument runs. First of all, there's an interesting difference in empirical predictions between social dominance orientation or social dominance theory and system justification theory, even though they're basically very similar in what they, how they think about how ideology shapes our understanding. System justification theory has the opposite prediction about distributions of belief in legitimizing myths. They argue that because people who are lower status or worse off in society are at greater risk of threats to their just world belief, of threats to their sense of control, they are going to be more likely to buy into legitimizing myths because it allows them to regain the illusion of control or that the world is just. So if you think, for example, about religion as the opiate for the masses kind of arguments from Marxism, what they're basically saying is belief in the divine justice of the next world is a coping strategy for all the shit you have to deal with in this world.
Yeah.
And there is some data on the palliative benefits of legitimizing myths for lower status individuals, that they, you know, can ward off, like, in horrifying ways. Like, so there's data that non-men are likely to simultaneously recognize that non-men are discriminated against while downplaying their own specific experiences of discrimination and do not believe that they experience it to the same degree, because it helps them feel like they are more in control of their own localized world. You know, they are not being touched by that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it makes it harder for them to acknowledge the problem and try to actually address it.
Just think of every older trans woman who is like, I've never experienced misogyny. I've never experienced transphobia. And I'm like, oh, I'm so hesitant to tell someone right. they're wrong when they report their personal experience. But I'm just like, there's no way you can be correct about that.
And here's the shitty part, like belief in God, that the like that shielding can result in them having somewhat better psychological outcomes on some levels, on some right. metrics.
Right. And right. this is where you often talk about how, like, so people, because of that reason, people argue that it's actually like an okay thing to encourage that.
Exactly. Right. Woof. So whether it's just world belief or meritocracy or belief in free will or any of these other legitimizing myths, people will point to the palliative and performance enhancing benefits. So the other part of this is, if you're a woman and you believe that there's less discrimination, you will have a higher likelihood of pursuing your goals because you have a higher belief that the world is going to correctly assess your merit, essentially, and right. respond well.
Yeah.
So you work harder for longer, which does actually improve your outcomes. Again, though, at the cost of internalizing, legitimizing myths about yourself.
Right.
And if you don't succeed, as many people don't, even when they do work very hard, you then have to tell yourself, essentially, you failed because you're the problem, not the system, because you've...
Right.
Or you risk a collapse of your entire sort of worldview. It's exactly like religion. You know, it's literally, religion is one of the, like, core legitimizing myths of this entire system. So... what I think, as I've looked at the data, my impression of it is that the social dominance folks are slightly more right on the distribution, that there's probably a little bit more of this stuff on the high end of society because of the psychological harms that are experienced by lower status individuals from internalizing these things. Losses of self, like the opposite of what you're experiencing if you're high status. You're losing self-esteem. You're losing recognition, you know, like valuing of your in-group. Think of all the ways in which people who try to, you know, climb your hierarchy ladders end up feeling yeah. alienated from their own communities, code switching, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? We've seen it all before. So even though there is a greater need for lower status individuals to rationalize their circumstances, that is offset, I think, by the greater costs of doing it through these myths, mm-hmm. leading to more ambivalence than on the higher status side, where everything is in favor of legitimizing the myths, including culture, right? You have to add in, yeah. of course, that like there's evidence that if you have higher social dominance orientation, you are more likely to seek out high status roles. You are more likely to be selected for those high status roles because you are also more likely to be a member of the dominant group and right. therefore are more likely to be reinforced in your legitimizing beliefs. So there's a lot of mechanisms that are playing in that direction, okay? So, all of this is to say, there is some evidence that men have what we can think of as, to varying degrees, a dominance mindset, that they see the world from a dominance perspective, which is a concept that comes up to tie this back to the nature stuff. Like I mentioned earlier, that the nature moments in this are really important. When I would teach environmental ethics, there was an article I taught about male gaze and the dominance mindset. It was a feminist approach to environmental ethics that essentially says, a problem is we, by nature, by instinct, look at nature from a dominance perspective. We look at it as something to be tamed and controlled. And that is a fundamentally male patriarchal mindset. It is the mindset that leads one to look out at like a beautiful landscape and instead of just enjoying the bliss of it, to think about how you could extract wealth and resources from it.
Right.
So what they recommend is moving away from that kind of dominance mindset. That would be sort of an example of the way that this broader psychological reality plays out. Now, why are men more likely to be social dominance oriented? To go back to that question of, if it is universal, why is it universal? Is it just all cultures reinforce it, or is it biological, the social dominance folks are a bit in the Evo cycle world. They are sympathetic to that, which I'm not as much, but I'll give you their argument. They claim that the difference is caused by men having higher evolutionary fitness benefits as a result of social dominance orientation. So essentially, if you think about the way that evolution works, it's whatever gives you that reproductive fitness, which is why some things can be more adaptive for men than women, like reproductive strategies, right? Yeah. So essentially, social dominance orientation would be associated with reproductive strategies that benefit men more than women, which, you know, is going to be at one level, just like if you evolution doesn't care how you impregnate the person, right?
Right, yeah.
Couldn't fucking care less. But also, if you have social dominance orientation, you are more likely to dominate other men, and by extension, their women. You are more likely to create a structure in which you're allowed to have multiple wives where other men have none. Lots of ways in which this can play out in terms of reproductive fitness that isn't just physical force.
Yeah. Okay. And so you said that is their argument, but that's one that you're not necessarily fully on board with. So what are
in the sense that I'm just not necessarily on board with evolutionary psych arguments because they're unprovable and they're just stories. Like what I mean is there's no way to test if that's actually what causes it.
Right.
And like we have to be careful about stories like that because they can then make us assume certain things about why it's persisting, for example.
Yeah.
That it's just that men are, you know, just that way. And so you just aren't going to be able to change them. There's a conflation of the genetic or the evolved and like not being malleable.
Gotcha. Well, so what is your sense of what do you think explains that dynamic?
So while I don't love any particular evolutionary psych story, I am broadly on board with the evolutionary psych premise that like our beliefs and behaviors are evolved features, and that culture is part of what accelerates that evolutionary process. So I think, you know, again, mix of nature and nurture, there probably is a sense in which it could have been, I don't think it's an implausible theory. I just don't think we should ever lean on theories like that because they're not testable. So yeah, I think it's
because
probably
that,
the case. This is generally,
I'm thinking that becomes a legitimizing myth of its own, right? Where you use it to justify, you use it to justify and reinforce patriarchy because it's a story that if you have a certain particular value set, that if you lean into that story, it becomes a justification for patriarchy to continue because
boys
it's like,
boys.
Like no, patriarchy is actually a good thing because it helps evolution and so on and so forth. And so, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I see.
Right. Yes. And the two primary ways in which a legitimizing myth tells you that an unjust system is actually just is by just straight up making an ethics argument or by naturalizing it. So we're very familiar, right? Like heteropatriarchy is just the naturalization of a particular worldview and the illusion that it is not actually like that. So then you get the folks, the anthropologists who bring about cultural relativism coming in and being like, as you were pointing out, here's this indigenous culture that is more matriarchal. So doesn't that prove your system, you know? And then you get these debates, really, really like in the weeds debates about like how many of these cultures actually were matriarchal and to what extent were they actually matriarchal, you know, like, yes, you trace the Jewish bloodline via the mother, but like women are still kept separate in the church and like lots of complexities to it. Right. So let's bring it back to the movie before we run out of time, because I want to talk about the Green Man here a little bit.
Yeah.
I think there's a sense in which.